And welcome back. Before we go, we're excited to check in with Doug Hendry. He's currently at Duke University, but not too long ago, he was in the engineering department at the University of Missouri, where, I hope I'm not overstating the case, Doug reinvented the toilet. Hi, Doug.
Well, to clarify, I think we're reinventing currently rather than past tense.
But okay.
Yes, thank you for that introduction and the opportunity to come on.
So when I say that you're reinventing the toilet, what exactly does that mean? Why does the toilet need reinvention?
Well, reinventing the toilet could be a little bit misleading because we're not reinventing just the toilet itself, but really the whole sanitation chain, specifically the sanitation chain in more underdeveloped parts of the world. Your guest earlier were talking about the sewer systems in Kansas City. Obviously, in places like the United States, we have a vast sewer infrastructure, and so that allows us to do decentralized wastewater treatment and sanitation. In most parts of the world, that's not the case, and so you have to create new novel processes and technologies for what's called decentralized sanitation.
Can you define decentralized sanitation?
Yeah, decentralized sanitation can mean a number of different things, but when I say it, I'm referring to treatment of sewage and wastewater on a much smaller scale than would be done in a place like Kansas City or elsewhere in the U.S. or the, quote, developed world. So when I say a smaller scale, I mean maybe either on the family scale or the small community scale.
So describe the toilet that you are in the process of developing. How does it work?
Yeah, so the Reinvent the Toilet Challenge was put forth by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And again, it encompasses all aspects of the sanitation chain. I'm currently working at Duke, but my teammates at Mizzou and at Duke are working on what we call the back-end processing side of the sanitation chain. So we're not redeveloping a new toilet itself, but we're developing a way to process harmful waste into clean, valuable byproducts.
What is the method that you are developing?
Yeah, we're using a technology called supercritical water oxidation.
And supercritical, that sounds exciting.
It is exciting. Supercritical water is water that is at high temperature and high pressure. And what is unique about supercritical water is that it's very different from liquid water. For example, the old saying, water and oil don't mix, only applies when you're talking to liquid water. When you heat up and pressurize and get into the supercritical region, all of a sudden water and oil, they do become soluble. And so you can imagine if you're trying to treat sewage or other types of organic material, having that solubility allows you to treat waste very, very rapidly to decompose it into harmful or harmless byproducts, as well as produce excess energy in the process.
So how does this toilet look the same as toilets that we're used to, or is it an entirely different structure? Or have you gotten to the structure yet?
I kind of want to make sure that everyone's visualizing this clearly. Our specific process, which we're calling supercritical water oxidation, is a process that's used to treat the waste of a small community, maybe between 1,000 to 2,000 people. It would be most applicable in urban, more densely populated areas around the world. And so we're collaborating with the Gates Foundation and with other partners of the Gates Foundation to put multiple aspects of the sanitation chain in place. So there are other groups that are working on the front-end user interface, which is the toilet itself. There are other groups working on collection and storage of waste. And then we're working on a way to process that waste.
Okay, so walk me through the supercritical oxidation process in layman's terms to the best of your ability. Because I feel like we're still speaking in generalities here, and I want to understand exactly what's happening.
Exactly what's happening. The supercritical water oxidation process, even though it sounds kind of cool and has some technical terms associated with it, it's not that complicated of a process. We take raw wastewater, raw sewage, pressurize it, and add heat. Because sewage is primarily water anyways, the water reaches a state where it becomes supercritical. And that happens at around 220 atmospheres of pressure and around 700 Fahrenheit degrees of temperature.
Whoa.
And at the so it's pretty extreme conditions, but at those supercritical conditions, the sewage all of a sudden becomes fully soluble in the water itself, which is kind of difficult to imagine, but you go from having a multi-phase solid slurry into a one homogeneous supercritical phase. And once you're in that phase, if you add oxygen, all of the organics are very quickly converted into carbon dioxide, which can just be released into the atmosphere, and excess heat, which we recapture for use in the process, as well as potentially for other uses as well.
So how does the user of this toilet, of a toilet that would be part of this process, that is, how does that person experience the difference between this and what we might be familiar with?
The difference on the individual user interface is not going to be inherently obvious. The primary advantage of a processing system like this is that we hope to be able to get it to operate, quote, off the grid, meaning with no hookup to electrical or water utilities. And in this way, we could treat waste in a decentralized way, decentralized, energy-neutral way, so that harmful waste doesn't have to be disposed of in other less safe means. For example, in a lot of places in the world, if they can't treat the waste on site and they don't have the sewer infrastructure to transport the waste, there's nothing they can do with it. The residents of the community come into contact with it, and some of the health issues that your previous guests were talking about become very prominent. For example, millions of children around the world die every year due to diarrheal disease. So that would be the advantage of using a processing system like this, is to decompose the waste. And in the future, we also hope to add valuable byproducts back into the community in the way of clean water and energy. But the primary motivation is just to treat the waste.
Where are you right now in the process of developing this toilet and making it available for use?
Mm-hmm. So Bill Jacoby, my former supervisor, professor at the University of Missouri in bioengineering, is overseeing most of the experimentation on a laboratory scale that's going on right now. Here at Duke, me and my colleagues are building what we're calling it a pilot scale system, but really it's a full scale size system designed to treat the waste of 1 to 2,000 people. And it will be finished with construction within a couple of months.
Wow, that's very soon.
It's very soon. We've been working on this project for about a year now, and we've been doing some good work, some good design work, made some breakthroughs on the laboratory scale, and we hope to demonstrate them on the full scale very shortly.
It's maybe a little counterintuitive to bring high-tech solutions to places that are low-tech enough to not have modern sewage systems. Can you talk about that a little?
That's a great question. And when you say words like supercritical, it kind of immediately triggers a sense of high technology. But I don't think that we should underestimate the ingenuity and the ability of people in, quote, underdeveloped parts of the world. And I don't like that term, but I'll use it here. Because the system that we're developing does not require a formal education. It requires a little bit of training, a little bit of maintenance, but we're designing it so that people in many different parts of the world can develop business opportunities around it and create a sustainable, viable business.
You've created this new model for the toilet to address the needs of what you were just referring to as countries in the developing world. And I share some of your qualms about that. But the truth is, we have global issues that affect all of us when it comes to water resources and water conservation. How can your toilet that you're developing inform these larger concerns about water?
I personally, and I think I speak for my team when I say this, I envision this technology becoming more of a global solution to a lot of these problems. Currently, we're most interested in solving sanitation issues in these less developed countries that in which there's a greater number of people who have a direct need for it. But within my career, I anticipate that supercritical water technology will become more of a global solution.
Well, we've run out of time for today's show. Thanks so much for chatting with me, Doug Hendry.
Just want to say thank you to you for having me on and to my colleagues at the University of Missouri here at Duke.
If you'd like to listen back to today's conversation about water and sewage systems, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. We'll have that audio available later in the day. At the beginning of today's show, you heard the voices of George Hawk and his coworkers, and that sewer sound was gathered by Matthew Long Middleton. Tune in tomorrow to hear about the past, present, and future of Highway 71 and the neighborhoods it changed. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for Up to Date next.